that paves about.
My name's Cameron. I spoke on IGD cast a few weeks ago about the Santa Cruz Wildcat strike. I am a graduate worker at Santa Cruz, and I'm also a militant of Black Rose Anarchist Federation.
My name is Muhammad Yusuf. I am a second-year graduate student at University of California, San Diego, and I'm similarly a militant in Black Rose.
At the end of the second week, Janet Napolitano issued a statement saying, "We will lay you off, and if you're an international student, you could possibly be deported if you don't turn in your grade." So people were referring to that as doomsday. So just to put it out, just to start us off, can you talk about kind of the buildup to that? Was there a lot of fear with people? Because in Santa Cruz, you know, as you discussed during the first week, I mean, there was the police crackdown. There was just massive amount of press, massive amount of support. People were flooding the pickets, hundreds of people shutting down the entrance to the campus. And then all these other schools kind of started to take notice. And there was lots of organizing going on. But what was that like leading up to Doomsday?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of buildup to Doomsday because it was set as this like hard deadline. And just to give people a quick refresher, this is all revolving around the withholding of grades, of undergraduate grades, which can be thought of sort of as our, like, the product of our labor. You know, if we were factory workers, it would be whatever widget that we work to create. Same thing here at the university, the end result of our labor, are undergraduate grades. So Doomsday was set as this really specific date. It was February 21st at 11:59 p.m. that Napolitano and the local UC Santa Cruz admin set up as the last chance for Wildcat strikers to turn in grades from fall quarter. And they basically levied this threat saying, if you don't turn in grades by then, you're going to be terminated. And so there was, I would say, obviously, some consternation, some fear, some nervousness around this. People were talking amongst ourselves about, you know, what does this mean? Do we actually think that they're going to in mass fire all of these, all of us graduate students, all of us teaching assistants on strike, only because our labor is so essential to the functioning of the university? So, for example, you know, I usually every quarter teach between 50 and 60 students. And it's only the labor of myself and my fellow graduate students, graduate student workers, that allow for the number of undergraduates who pass through the university to pass through the university. If it wasn't for us doing the teaching and the grading and all of that, the university would not have enough faculty on hand to be able to teach the number of undergraduates that they try to get through the programs. So yeah, leading up to it, I mean, there was a lot of build up to this doomsday date. We were picketing pretty heavily that week. We were shutting down the campus, or the entrances to campus on and off during that week. And then, the actual doomsday date, we set up as sort of, an action to culminate towards. And that was, there's a lot of buildup for it. We put up a lot of posters. We did a lot of outreach, a lot of on-campus organizing, reaching out to not only undergraduate students, but also to staff and faculty members. We also reached out to, local people in Santa Cruz. So like people who reside in town, but don't have a direct relationship with the university. They organized themselves and had like their own autonomous march that came to the picket line. So there was a lot of organizing that went into building up to this doomsday date. And I would say there was some nervousness, but I think that was sort of assuaged by the fact that people were actually doing something and building something, around sort of our collectivity and our solidarity that, prevented people from being too scared, or prevented people from being, prevented people from acquiescing to the threat that the university was making. So I think that if it wasn't for us building towards something, probably a lot of people in their isolation, would have chosen to, you know, crumble under the threat that the university was making. But because we were collectively taking an action, We were collectively working towards something. We relied on one another, and a large number of people, around 100 people, ended up not submitting grades on that doomsday date. So that happened on Friday. And after that happened, it was really funny, actually, because this doomsday date passed. We didn't get an email. We didn't really see anything. We didn't know what was happening. And then all of a sudden, our inboxes get another email from a local administrator here in Santa Cruz, not Napolitano, but our local executive vice chancellor, who's named Lori Kletzer. She sent an email out basically saying, so, you know, we're going to give you all an extension to get these grades in, because clearly nobody, or very few, if anybody, turned in the grades as a result of their threat. So they were like, you know what, we're going to give you a little more time. We're going to give you a few extra days to turn in these grades, and hopefully you do. Otherwise, like we said, we're going to have to fire you. But, you know, it's just this ridiculous wavering that they do that shows how weak they are, that, you know, they make a big threat. They make a big show that, you know, if you don't turn in grades by this date, you're going to be fired. And then, of course, right after that date passes, they're like, oh, well, actually, we're going to move the date back a little bit because of how ineffective their threat was. So the new doomsday date that got set was this past Wednesday, and people continue to withhold. And that is what has happened up to this point, up to today, which is Friday. And I don't know, Mohammed, you might want to talk a little bit about what you saw on your campus compared to in relationship to what we were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the threat of everything coming out of doomsday, right? So not only people losing their jobs, but people losing access to like healthcare and other medical resources, the threat of deportation for international students, like it really riled people up, because, you know, beyond just the ridiculous fact that the university is now punishing people for, you know, fighting for what they deserve, which is just a basic, you know, cost of living adjustment, all these threats are suddenly being deployed from the university administration. And so, you know, I can't obviously speak to other campuses, but specifically at San Diego, we saw a lot of people starting to get more involved, people who were, you know, maybe not even like members of the union, right? Coming out to rallies, and, you know, reaching out to us, you know, and offering their whatever, you know, specialties they have, whether it's like graphic design, various written documents to put out, like FAQs, various statements, right? And so people were really getting mobilized by that. And that was something that, you know, we as organizers saw. And, you know, I think it really galvanized the support for people at Santa Cruz. And, you know, once doomsday came and passed, you know, we were all sort of under the assumption that, you know, even if folks are being fired, it might not be something that is like super spectacular, right? And because, you know, essentially if, you know, Napolitano has sent out this massive like UC-wide email saying like, look at what happened at Santa Cruz, that might just piss people off more. And so we expected it to, you know, we expected people to get fired, and even if it was like quiet or somewhat under the radar. And so after the first doomsday passed, we really started to turn inwards and started organizing and saying, all right, well, so far we've been organizing in a very reactive way. We've been, you know, having these really powerful shows of solidarity with Santa Cruz. We've been, you know, actively responding to the administration's threats and the administration's lies. But now it's time for us to really consider, like, what would a COLA campaign look like, you know, in its sort of like full form at San Diego. And so for the past week or week and a half or so, that's really what we've been doing, is, you know, organizing our departments, organizing our coworkers, and, you know, working towards, again, you know, what I mentioned before, was, you know, we're working towards something similar of some sort of strike, right? Whether that is grade withholding, whether that is a full labor stoppage. We're exploring our options, because another, you know, narrative that was given out by the administration was that, well, they think they can quash what's happening at Santa Cruz because other campuses are quiet. And it's honestly hilarious how wrong they've been proven. Because Santa Barbara has, I think 800 or more people coming out, right? Like,
right.
Davis also, right, had massive amounts of support. And even at other campuses that don't have an action going yet, you know, like San Diego, like Irvine, Berkeley, LA, like there's still been massive, you know, like just demonstrations, and everyone is sort of working towards, shutting down the UC, honestly. And I think that, you know, given that today folks have now been fired, and everyone knows, I think that this movement is just going to get more powerful because, you know, yeah, that's intimidation, right? Of saying like, well, that could happen to us too. We could get fired. But at the same time, you know, I think there's a very strong, like, moral outrage that this is not right. And that ultimately what we're doing across the UC is setting an example, right? For not just academic workers, but workers all across the country that are being suppressed by their bosses, that are being suppressed by business style unions. And yeah, I mean, I think that's the broader context, but really at San Diego, right, we're working towards, a movement for our own COLA and for a COLA for, you know, grad workers across the state.
Well, Muhammad, I wanted to ask you, being that you all are kind of looking at what's happening in San Diego, what's that like? Kind of like pointing to somewhere far away and saying like, hey, we should do that, especially when students are watching, you know, the police come out, kids are getting beat up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, to them, that's not exciting. They don't want anything to do with that. And they also don't want to be fired. So what's it like trying to develop a campaign around that?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely tough because people, you know, do get, you know, scared or worried, about like, well, what if the, you know, what if like riot police show up here too? But I think the overarching like emotion at a lot of these, at a lot of our demonstrations, a lot of our meetings is like, is just anger, right? It's outrage because even though Santa Cruz is, you know, like a few hundred miles away or so, I'm not totally certain on California geography yet, but it still feels close to home, right? Because they're in a similar position as us, right? Like we cannot afford to live where we work. We're also in the UC where we are, you know, fulfilling a lot of the same functions in terms of research and teaching. And so, you know, even though it is somewhere far away, like it's that sense of, well, this could happen to us, right? And so, you know, what we've been doing really is trying to work against the years of disorganization that's sort of plagued our campus, in part again, and I personally want to stress this point of like a lot of it is because of the failure of the structure of our union and of the institution of, you know, that kind of like bureaucratic unionism. And so what we've had to do is just really go like rogue, right, and start autonomously organizing, and I think that's excited a lot of people because for so long, people have not really bought into the idea of worker power because when they go into the established sort of routes that we have through the union or through the you know, university's various committees and associations and whatnot, you feel completely disempowered because you can't actually do anything. And so now that, you know, there is a sense of fear, there is a sense of urgency, there is a sense of anger, but I think, you know, what comes out of all of that together is this sense of feeling empowered because, you know, things are moving on the ground, right? I recall, on the 21st, when we had our demonstration, we had around 200 to 250 people there. And a professor of mine came up to me and she was like, this is one of the largest demonstrations I've seen on this campus in my time here. And to think that, you know, that demonstration itself was hobbled together essentially in like a couple of days. It's mind blowing. And I think that speaks volumes to how, willing people are to actually act on this. You know, and I think that, you know, we've really been inspired by what's happening at Santa Cruz. But by what the, you know, the workers are able to accomplish. And I think that it gives us a sense that, you know, we can do that as well. And that we can, you know, through, you know, looking out for each other and through caring for each other, we can survive whatever the fuck the administration throws at us. And I think that's incredibly powerful and empowering.
You mentioned the unions, you know, leading up to these two doomsdays. What have they been doing? Have they been silent? Have they attempted to do anything?
So I can talk a little bit about this. And also just like before I answer this question specifically, I was thinking about some of the stuff Muhammad said, and I We've posted about this on Twitter and tried to make this clear, but I think that people, especially people listening to this podcast, should understand the scale at which we are operating here and the scale of the institution that we're fighting. California is the world's sixth largest economy. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than the entire economy of the United Kingdom. In California, the University of California system is the state's largest employer. So the University of California is one of the world's largest employers, and we are fighting basically one of the biggest bosses in the world. That's what we are doing. That's what graduate student workers are doing by going on strike. And the strike isn't only a demand for a small cost of living adjustment. That's the bread and butter issue. But I think really more so than that, what we're doing is we are, as academic workers, what we've seen in the university is the erosion of the university as a public institution and its replacement with these austerity and marketization measures that don't value education and don't see a public institution like the University of California as being something that should exist for the public good, but rather that it should be a mechanism that works for the market. And, you know, that's what we are bumping up against, and that's what we're fighting. So I just wanted to give some scale, because I think it's important to emphasize that oftentimes people, you know, they hear that graduate workers are going on strike and they don't really understand how it relates to them. But this is truly, you know, one of the biggest institutions in the state of California, in the United States in general, and in the world. And then I'll move on and answer your specific question about this, about the unions. So, yeah, I mentioned in our earlier interview that the UAW has sort of had its hands tied. The official UAW structure has had its hands tied because of the legalistic problems that it would face if it were to back a wildcat strike. So our contract that was negotiated in 2018, which is the contract that we're currently under and that expires in 2022, speaking for myself here, as an individual, I will say that I think the contract is horrid. It only secured a 3% pay raise, for graduate workers, which is absolutely nowhere near enough to keep up with inflation, let alone to keep up with ridiculous housing prices in university towns like Santa Cruz or San Diego. This contract was terrible from the start. It didn't have a mandate on the Santa Cruz campus. 83% of workers here voted it down. We said we do not want this contract. And it ended up getting passed through some, you know, what I would say were back channel sort of inappropriate, undemocratic measures in 2018. So it got passed. But, you know, graduate workers here on Santa Cruz's campus did not see that it had a mandate, or we didn't see it as like something that we really felt strongly about. So the union has had its hands tied in the midst of this wildcat strike, and they have had to make public declarations like disavowing the strike, saying, you know, we don't officially sanction this. We don't think that graduate workers should go on strike, especially because the contract has a no strike clause in it. And they have to say these things because if they were to come out full force and back the strike off the bat, back a strike action under a contract that has a no strike clause, then they would be up for what would be called an unfair labor practice. Basically, what is a type of lawsuit, although it doesn't go through the courts exactly. It goes to in California, it goes to PERB, which is like our statewide version of the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. But it's basically, you can think of it as a lawsuit. So the union was afraid of being opened up to legal proceedings if they decided to back the strike within a contract. I think that the union officials wanted to take a wait and see approach in order to determine whether or not our strike had legs. They wanted to see if it was going to sort of peter out on the Santa Cruz campus, and not really become something they'd have to worry about. You know, Santa Cruz is a relatively small campus in the UC system. It's relatively underfunded, and I don't think that they would want union workers to be fired, but I think that if the situation remained sort of contained to Santa Cruz, I don't think the union officials would so much be, they wouldn't be as pressed to do anything if it were to spread elsewhere like it is now. So, mm-hmm. So now that it's, now that the strike is spreading, Santa Barbara voted to go on a full strike and they have, Davis voted to go on a grading strike and they have, the other campuses have COLA movements that are doing fantastic organizing. The union officials see that this is spreading and they recognize that in order to basically retain any legitimacy, they have to get ahead of this thing now. Because if they don't, you know, they see that the rank and file is going to run away with this thing, and they don't, you know, necessarily want that to happen. So they're trying now to get out ahead of it, and they're exploring the possibilities of what it would look like to possibly back the strike. I don't think that this is necessarily something that we should rely on or think is actually going to happen. But you know, the rank and file has come out so far ahead in terms of militancy and self-activity and self-organization that the union has been left in the dust on nearly every campus. So, the other thing that's important to state is that the university, regents filed a ULP, an unfair labor practice, like I mentioned, against our union, just in the last week, basically stating, hey, UAW 2865, you guys didn't do enough to try to quash this strike action before it became as big as it is. So, the university system is trying to, you know, punch against the union, and the union has filed a counter ULP. And this is like pretty common, in labor actions. Like ULPs get traded back and forth between unions and institutions pretty regularly. But it's, you know, it is at least heartening to see that our union is hitting back in the ways that they can. But at the same time, I do think that the self-activity of the rank and file here and elsewhere on other campuses has been what's been driving this whole thing forward. And we've bucked the sort of cautious and more conservative elements that have ideologically led the union in the past few years by showing that, you know, rank and file militancy is the thing that's going to lead the way now. We're pissed off and we're going to make things happen.
Yeah. I mean, if I could just tack on to that as well, even at San Diego during the last contract cycle, the margin wasn't as stark, but a majority of workers at San Diego also, voted no on the contract. I believe it was like 60 to 65% of people, voted to reject the contract. And I think that's, you know, a lot of that is again, due to the fact that people just do not trust or believe in the union because the structure has been so disempowering. And I agree that it is, you know, in a sense, like heartening to see the union now taking action. But I, you know, and I'm speaking again as like an individual, but certainly other people, at least on San Diego's campus, feel the sense that, or share my feeling in that, you know, some of this could also be seen as the union trying to co-opt the movement, right? That at this point, you know, they've seen that the strike, as Cam put it, like has legs, right? They've seen that worker militancy is much stronger. We can organize ourselves. And now, you know, coming in and saying, hey, we're going to file a counter ULP. And when you do file a ULP, there's a possibility to sanction what's called like a ULP strike, essentially. And so, you know, if that does happen, suddenly this, you know, there's a risk that this becomes now the UAW's movement. And I think that a lot of workers are resistant to that because, you know, they see it as something that we ourselves have built up, not through these union structures, not through these various, you know, bullshit legal means, but rather, you know, through our own militancy and dedication to, like empowering ourselves and to getting what we deserve. And, you know, as Cameron's also saying, like, we're really saving the heart and soul of higher education in this country. And so I think that, you know, when we, it's always, you know, tricky to explain this to folks that aren't as familiar with like labor, or especially the just odd situation within the University of California system. But, you know, really like what we're seeing now is a revolt against two kinds of bosses, right? You have the university administration, which is like your employer, and you have the union bosses, right? Which really want to line their pockets with dues money and care about, you know, just getting these contract cycles done quick, or rather negotiations done quick, rather than actually caring about the adequacy of those contracts. And really, I think, you know, in this sense, both of those bosses are now, you know, like we are the reckoning that they have to deal with in the form of the COLA movement. Yeah.
Just curious if you can just talk about kind of like the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah. I mean, man, it's, I know conversations that I've had with like fellow graduate workers, we've all talked about like how when we win, it's going to be very weird to go back to work. You know, it's going to be, it's going to be very weird to like try to get back in the rhythm of so-called normalcy. So like, I know on my end, it's great and it feels fantastic to be able to like go to the picket every day and go to a place where I know I'm going to be sort of in common with a lot of other people who are in the same struggle as I am and who are building in different capacities and bringing their own sort of like specific skills and traits into the struggle and affecting them and affecting it in particular ways with what they can bring. So like that's been great. And the mood on the picket line has always been really like jovial and fun. We have a big speaker system that we set up on this like grass patch that's like adjacent to the main entrance of the campus where the picket normally takes place. And it's like solar powered. And it's a big PA system and it plays a lot of like really great fun, like dance music and stuff. And so people dance on the picket, like as we're walking back and forth and all that. And, people hold like, teach-ins, on the grassy area so that they can take breaks from picketing. I know that like several different types of teach-ins have taken place. I know there's like the radical history of UC Santa Cruz, the radical history of like the UCs in general. There's been teach-ins about specifically about the housing crisis, quote unquote, in California, which by the way is just a result of housing under capitalism. But that is has been going on in and around the picket since the beginning. There have been like a multifaceted, multidimensional picket presence has been the staple of what's going on at Santa Cruz, with lots of people coming out and lots of people doing lots of different things at the picket. It isn't sort of just like this one back and forth walking with picket signs motion that you often see at like labor demonstrations or picket lines, which are great. That's fantastic. But I think that given the sort of like circumstances that we are in as academic workers on a college campus, it's really great to see that people can get involved in ways that are sort of, you know, tailored to their own interests, or that maybe bring different things to the table rather than just like having to walk back and forth with a picket sign. So it's been fun. I think that honestly, like people are really tired right now and exhausted from having done this for like 3 weeks in a row out in the sun every day. People are like just, I know I can speak personally, I feel physically exhausted, but I think if it wasn't for this multifaceted sort of picket that we have with music and dancing and fun and food every day and teach-ins and things like this, if it wasn't for those things, I think that people would have been a lot more tired than they are now. People would have become a lot more exhausted a lot more quickly. So I don't know. I'm really happy with the way things are going on the campus at the moment, or on the picket at least.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I guess one thing that I just want to tack onto that as well, something that's been especially noticeable to me at UC San Diego is the fact that, you know, this struggle has allowed us to build a lot of connections that honestly should have been in place, but haven't been because of the way that organizing has been done, through these very like limited and structured models. And so, for example, like bridging the divides between undergraduate and graduate student organizing. I know at Santa Cruz, there's the People's Coalition, which is like this fantastic collective of, like student and worker and like activist groups. That's really just been like, you know, pushing not just, you know, the demands for a COLA, but also demands for like a more just society and university. And here at UC San Diego, what we've been doing is really trying to build ties of solidarity with undergrads, because they face so many of the same issues that we do, like, you know, housing insecurity, food insecurity, just inability to access adequate healthcare, and mental health care is particularly an issue that stands out. And we've called upon them to be like, hey, you know, we can't win without y'all, without you undergrads. But it's also important to keep in mind that, like, solidarity isn't a one-way street. And so I've heard, like, just some fantastic, like, I've been able to be in contact with some fantastic undergrad organizers who are planning, like, big things, in terms of, like, their own empowerment as students and workers, and see the COLA campaign as something that can catalyze, like serious, like, structural change from multiple sectors of the university. And that extends also to, like, adjunct faculty and, like, non-tenured folks, who are in similarly precarious situations, right? And additionally, bridging the gap between UC San Diego and the broader community of San Diego. You may not know, but UC San Diego is technically in La Jolla, which is this very, like, corporatized, suburban, like, hyper wealthy area of San Diego County. And it, you know, very much so, like, creates a sense of disconnection from everything else that's going on in San Diego, because San Diego has a wonderful and radical, like, history of not just labor organizing, but, you know, just, like, anti-capitalist, anti-state organizing on all fronts. And so this has been a way for us to connect to groups like the San Diego Tenants Union, which is doing really fantastic work to fight against just the, as Cam said, housing under capitalism, which in general is just disastrous. But also these really predatory and racist and xenophobic developers and landlords who, just completely exacerbate problems such as, like, houselessness, right? And I don't think it's, I'll end it here, but I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of these developers live in, like, literally the same subdivision as our chancellor, Pradeep Khosla, who's, you know, like, a former, like, scientist at DARPA, helped develop drone technologies. And so these connections between, like, local and, you know, national and international scales of capitalist and imperialist violence, a lot of that starts to become clear through something like the COLA movement, and through, you know, and we as grad workers and in building ties with our communities and with our undergrads, really are finding a way to fight against that. And so that's been something that's been just awesome to see.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, we've been talking a lot on This Is America about the electoral cycle, obviously. Bernie Sanders, just as we're recording this, tweeted out about attacking Jenna Napolitano, saying, you know, this is messed up. I'm just curious, you know, Black Rose has had an excellent kind of line on electoralism and, you know, socialists in high places and all that stuff. I'm curious, you know, what's it been like having people like Sanders come out in support of the strike?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of love for Bernie at Santa Cruz in general. I think that that's, like, undeniable. Most of the like undergraduates, or a large number of them, and like even a lot of like graduate students, like people who still sort of have a relatively uncritical take on electoral politics, like that he is their candidate, and that's great, that's fine. I think that in terms of, if we're looking at this purely from a strategic standpoint for the strike and for the strike being able to win, I can't deny that, like, having someone with 10 million Twitter followers tweet about a labor action, I can't deny that that's, like, helpful, because it is, because it's just a huge platform. However, I do want to make clear that, like, the people who exist under the assumption that, like, it was Bernie who helped inspire worker militancy for, like, the Red for Ed, West Virginia teacher strikes that rolled across the country, or that it's Bernie that's giving people the confidence to go out on this strike or any of the other strikes that have happened recently, I think that's completely untrue. Like, like Bernie as a politician or any politician is like really the last thing that people are considering in our organizing meetings and our escalation campaign. Any of that stuff, like the thoughts and like will of a politician are very far from people's minds on the ground here, very far from the minds of the rank and file. I think people welcome the support, and like, you know, I welcome the support too. I welcome the support of anybody who wants to get behind the strike, but I do think that, like, you know, they have to get behind the strike. They don't want to, they can't get in front of the strike and attempt, you know, to make it about them and attempt to make it, something that is going to boost their electoral chances. But, you know, if Bernie wants to, you know, come walk the picket line or whatever, I'm not going to stop him. but, you know, like, I don't think that his power as a politician, regardless of the fact that he's, you know, the most popular Democratic primary politician right now, like, regardless of that, I don't think that, like, his role in this campaign is something that people are really considering a whole lot. So that's where I'm at. You know, I am sort of the opinion that I'm not like a vulgar abstentionist. I don't think that, like, our line as anarchists should be, you know, voting in principle is wrong. That's not where I'm coming from. Where I'm coming from is, you know, vote or don't. I personally don't put much like faith or stock in voting, but like vote or don't, but always organize. That's the most important thing you have to do. That's what it all redounds to. You have to organize. Mohammed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would say, you know, similarly, I'm entirely ambivalent about voting or the electoral system. But I do think that, you know, visibility helps, right? It gets the word out to people who might not otherwise see it. And, you know, internally, we've, you know, a lot of the organizers are super hype about Bernie and you know, his support and this and that. They want to vote for him. But I also think that we recognize that we can't let electoralism, you know, take claim over the struggle. Because obviously in this country it has a nasty tendency of just consolidating everything under the guise of, oh, this is like the Democratic Party and this is how we're going to progress this country and all those sort of bullshit narratives. But I think that, you know, when we're like developing messaging to go outwards, you know, we are very intentional about asserting the fact that this is worker power, right? This is self-organization. This is not us being inspired by politicians or parties or policies. You know, this is about us fighting for our rights, and for what we deserve. And really, like, that's the bottom line. And I think, you know, Cameron puts it really beautifully when you say, you know, are you getting behind the strike or are you getting in front of it? And I think, you know, all the organizers, regardless of their support for Bernie or not, regardless of their investment in electoral politics or not, that's something that we keep in mind, is that, you know, we need to make sure that our voices are the ones that are coming first, and that, you know, it's really about the workers and it's about the movement that we're building, and that it needs to stand on its own to really have any sort of real and substantive effect.
So the big news of today is that it was announced that 54 people at Santa Cruz were officially fired by the university. So I think people want to know what happens next. Now there's officially Santa Cruz, UC Davis, and UC Santa Barbara that have pledged to go on a strike. We were saying before we started recording that UC Santa Barbara is going on a full strike, and UC Davis, I believe, is saying that they will not turn in grades. And Santa Cruz is still on. So I'm curious, in your eyes, what happens now? And also, like, will we see I don't know if you can talk about this, but will we see an escalation on other campuses going forward?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about that news. Yeah, I mean, after this, like, initial doomsday deadline and then this like secondary doomsday deadline, after the initial doomsday deadline, we voted collectively to withhold grades. That was our collective decision at the General Assembly that took place right before the initial doomsday deadline. And after doomsday one happened, people were already sort of considering themselves fired. That was what people we're that's what we were saying to other campus organizers at the other UCs, is we consider ourselves fired. So do with that what you will. If you are planning on striking as a sort of retaliation for them firing us, then you have to go now. Do it. I think that argument was harder to make because we didn't have a paper in hand that said you're fired. We didn't have pink slips. And honestly, like personally, I didn't think that they were going to hand out pink slips. I was under the impression that if these people had like an ounce of strategic thinking in their brains, that they would try to do this as quietly as possible, because they saw, I'm sure they saw going around on social media, that all of these other campuses were planning their actions as contingent on how Santa Cruz was going to react to the strike. If Santa Cruz was going to choose to fire its workers, then X, Y, and Z is going to happen. We're either, like, other campuses are either going to go on a grading strike in retaliation for the firings, or other campuses are going to go on a full strike in retaliation for the firings. And it strikes me as so, like, strategically idiotic that they did what they did today and sent out a mass firing email to all these people on our campus. It's just, you know, I don't know how or why these administrators are being paid as much as they are when they clearly don't know what they're doing. So that's where things are at right now on our campus. We are, you know, gearing up for next week, which we expect to be pretty big. Nothing is set in stone at the moment, but, you know, we are, because the sort of veritable hammer has dropped on us, we are ready to go all out. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet, but I think that people on this campus are feeling energized again and feeling ready to, you know, put the screws to the admin for carrying out this really atrocious, action that they did by firing people and, you know, in turn, putting people in the danger of being deported, denying people what would be their health insurance. People I know that have, you know, chronic health problems that won't be getting their health insurance because of this firing. They are, you know, they're doing this anyway, and they had the gall, the campus administrators, to put as the second line in the firing email that, quote unquote, we care about the lives of our graduate student workers. It's just so incredibly tone deaf. And I think people are pissed off. They're pissed off they were pissed off by the tone deafness of the administration when this initially kicked off. And the people here are continuing to be pissed off by the tone deafness that the administration has maintained throughout this entire process. So, we're ready to go. And our advice to the other campuses is let's go. I don't know if Mohammed wants to speak about what's going on in San Diego and in relation to us being fired, but
one of our main slogans and chants has been, if you retaliate, we escalate. Now the university's retaliated, and we're going to keep good on that promise, and we're going to escalate. You know, currently San Diego has a strike poll out, and we're still collecting data on that. But as of right now, a majority of workers are willing to either withhold grades or go out on a full labor stoppage. And I think that the news from today of these mass firings is just going to galvanize people. And, you know, really, like, I think the administration is kind of digging its own grave in this sense, where they've just been so brazen and so tone deaf with everything that they've been putting out. Whether it's these threats or whether it's their, you know, like just bold faced lies that they care about their students or they care about the educational environment of the university, right? When really, like, you know, we are the ones that not only make that education happen, but we are fighting again, you know, for the heart and soul of the quality of the education, of the actual content, right? And, you know, I've said this before, but, you know, this struggle for a cost of living adjustment, this struggle for a more just university, is in many ways like the realest education that any student could receive. And so, you know, for us, like, we see this as a sign to go, right? To escalate and to take any steps necessary to ensure that, you know, this situation doesn't just peter out, or that, you know, folks just aren't scared back into submission, because, you know, we're willing to fight. And I think the university is really calling our bluff and saying, like, well, I don't know. But I think we're going to prove them wrong, right? And so when we win, we'll be able to look back on this and say, yeah, we overcame, you know, this behemoth that is the University of California system. And we did that through self-organization, through militancy. And I think, you know, at San Diego, which has been a relatively, I would say, a relatively militant but disorganized campus, I think that this has been a huge catalyst in creating more of that organization and of getting folks to, you know, really just like self-activate and say, you know what, we can't wait for anyone to come in and save us or to offer us a way out. We're the ones that have to do it ourselves. And that's what's been motivating so much of the organizing and of the struggle that's been behind COLA.
What do people need in support? It seems like this is something that I would really encourage people, like, even if you're not a student, if you're in the area, if you can drive to a campus, go and experience it. See what it's like to see hundreds of people, you know, standing up for their own interests, you know, against the police autonomously. I mean, I think people, you know, have a lot to gain from this experience. If you're listening to this and you haven't experienced something like this in your lifetime yet, now would be the time to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say if you come to our picket at Santa Cruz, you'll be welcomed with open arms and your belly will get filled with good food that we have every day, and your ears will be filled with good music that we play. And I'm sure, like, you're going to have a good time. And even if that means having to stand up to the cops, which luckily we haven't had to do in the past week or so, but even if that means that, then you'll be able to experience the kind of solidarity that we have when we've stood up together against the police. So, yeah, I would welcome, I'm sure we would welcome, I mean, not even sure, I'm positive that if you came to the picket, you'd be welcomed. So please do come. If you're unable, if you don't live in California or near one of these campuses, I would encourage you to give to our strike fund. It's crucial now more than ever that that people, you know, donate to our strike fund, because 54 people have been fired and they're not going to have pay. And that is something that we've been trying to prepare for in terms of getting the word out about the strike fund. But now more than ever, the sort of material reality of the situation has come down to bear on us, and on the bear to bear on the people who've been fired. So please donate to the strike fund. Please come to the picket if you can. Get in touch with us. If you live in the Bay Area, you can get in touch with us through the Black Rose, Bay Area Twitter, which is, Bay Area BRRN, and our DMs are open. So, you know, come talk to us if you want to get plugged in any way. If nothing else, donate to the strike fund and spread the word, because pressure on the university, I think, is what's going to win this thing, alongside spreading the strike to every corner of the state.
Yeah, and I'd echo, you know, San Diego will have a strike fund coming up soon, but at the moment, like, donating and helping out folks at Santa Cruz is, you know, just is super imperative. Similarly, you can find us on social media. The UCSD COLA is at COLA UCSD. We also have a Facebook page, but Twitter is definitely the best way to keep updated. And if you live in the area, like, you know, as Cam was saying, like, come out to some of our events. We do our best to publicize them. And they're open to everyone that's around campus or in the community. And it really helps, you know, to know that, we're not, you know, alone or isolated in the struggle, right? And to see all the messages of solidarity coming in really from around the world, right? Like, we've received statements from grad locals and other unions, like, across the country, folks over in the UK on the UCU strike, right? University College Union. Mm-hmm. Those messages, I think, just really, you know, like, make people feel the energy and the support that is behind us. And, yeah, I mean, honestly, like, if you've never experienced, like, a picket or some sort of those, you know, like, some demonstration like that, it's a completely different kind of energy. And it's, you know, it's a struggle, but at the same time, it's so wholesome. And yeah, really, there's so many ways to get involved. And if you're curious as to how, you know, please reach out.
Awesome. Well, any other things that you all want to go over or talk about? I know, you know, a lot of this stuff we could spend hours on, but any other big things that we want to talk about right now?
You know, I mean, I can't think of anything in particular. Everything is sort of right now, we're in, like, full-on organizing mode in response to the firing. So I'm sure we'll get stuff publicized about, you know, what the next steps are and like how we plan to escalate. But for now, yeah, just keep your eyes peeled on both the Bay Area Black Rose Twitter, but also if you want to follow the UCSC campaign Twitter, it's at PayUsMoreUCSC on Twitter and on Instagram. And if anything comes up, if any like actions that we're encouraging attendance to come up, you'll be able to see them there. So, yeah, there's nothing that I can think of that's big that's coming up. This was sort of the big thing. This was the university's nuclear option, their last ditch effort to sort of like ensure that the graduate workers get back in line and shut up about not being able to pay their rent. So now that they've sort of expended their last best threat that they had against us, I feel like people are going to come out of this feeling liberated and ready to sort of escalate to the next stage.
I would just say at San Diego, like, keep an eye out for Monday because big announcements definitely coming up.
How do you see this struggle generalizing in the rest of society?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that we've been discussing internally as an organization, because in some ways, you know, the university itself or universities in general aren't the best bellwether for how things are going to go in a wider social context. But at the same time, I think that what we're reacting to in the UC system is sort of a recognizable, generalizable, legible demand that is being made, that is being levied for a cost of living adjustment. It's very clearly in the name of our demand is the cost of living has exploded. It's been exponential. It costs incredible amounts of money just to sort of reproduce your regular life. And I mean, by no means are graduate workers and other workers who are working service industry jobs, construction jobs, minimum wage jobs, by no means are any of us living extravagantly. We're doing the very best we can to scrape by on the meager sort of crumbs that our employers are dishing out to us. And I think that because of that, the COLA demand is generalizable. It is sort of a recognizable thing that other workers and other industries could pick up and like very easily modulate to fit their own context. You know, that's why the cost of living adjustment, I think, was chosen initially as a rallying at Santa Cruz. Is a cost of living adjustment is something that is like normally, it's like a normal thing that typically bargained for over the last 100 years in this country. And it's not really like what do I want to say? It's not a radical demand. Like I think that the bread and butter COLA demand is not radical. It's very, very like understated for what it is. It's an ask for a slight increase to our yearly pay in order to be able to afford rent. Like that's not a very extreme demand that we're making. Although I do think that the building around this particular bread and butter demand can generalize or can transform into power that can allow us to make more demands and make better demands and extract more concessions from our employers, whether that employer is the UC or whether that employer is a private institution, like a grocery store or a construction company or something like that. I think that the COLA demand is a small open window that we can sort of climb in through and then begin to expand our demands. So I think that the next stage of this, beyond sort of just struggling against the UC and beyond getting a media narrative around it, going and continuing to go, is finding ways that we can connect with people outside of the campuses and finding ways that we can sort of take learned in our campaign and apply it to other campaigns, whether that's like rent strikes or whether that's COLAs for other workers in other industries. I think that there is a lot of potential here, and I really hope that it doesn't get sort of the campuses or to academic workers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you have something like I was saying, as basic as a cost of living adjustment, And you can really explode that outwards, right? And so to think about, you know, one of our slogans, which is that our pay is too damn, or the rent is too damn high and our pay is too damn low. That's something that pretty much all, I think, working people can relate to and can say that they've lived through. And so, you know, this is, I think, really a show of force and should hopefully build confidence in working people that, you know, you can take the power into your own hands, right? And that through collective, like through collectivity and through mutual aid, and through direct action, you can really, you know, get what you deserve. And, you know, especially I think considering the sort of like specificity of the university as a workplace, right? There's a misconception that, oh, it's this ivory tower and full of, you know, elitists and upper class folks, but really it's a precarity machine, right? It produces it, you know, it runs off of labor of people that it, you know, subjects to, you know, poverty through these various austerity measures. And I think that, you know, thinking about how the university is wrapped up in various arms of the state and of the military and of the police, you can really start unfolding on both ends, right? Thinking about how this is a struggle that's generalizable to workers throughout this country, and also how, you know, this could be a struggle that really unfolds at like a global scale to think about broader issues of the environment and of militarism and of fighting against those things. And so I think that, you know, it's in my mind, at least, very like beautiful the way that, you know, something as simple as this demand articulates so well with those broader based struggles and initiatives.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.